Matt.
Hey, Galf.
How are we doing?
Good. Welcome to the Brewhouse Show.
Yeah, welcome. And what are we talking about today?
That is a wonderful question.
Are we just going to like randomly talk for 20?
We don't have any topics.
So just so the listeners know, this week's been a very busy week. We've got a lot going on here at Brewhouse, but we wanted to make sure we were consistent with making something or distributing something. So I just said, Pat, let's just press record. And here we are.
Mm-hmm.
How's your week been going?
It's been interesting. Ups and downs. This past weekend, So the last few weekends have been pretty hectic. A couple weekends ago, I was back in Ontario for literally like 30 hours. The weekend after that, two weekends ago, I was on a crazy 6-kilometer hike both ways with a bum knee and 40 pounds on my back. So over 4 boulder fields. So that was a lot of fun. This week was actually my partner's and my 1-year anniversary. So
congratulations.
We did that. Did some celebrating of that. Went to our one of the first restaurants we ever went to. Nepalese place called Yak and Yeti Bistro on
nice.
West 4th. Highly recommended if you're into that sort of thing. And then yeah, just general work. Been working on a client project as a product manager for the last little while, and that's been going really well. I've learned a lot through that process, both in terms of, and this is something I had a bit of experience with being a freelancer, with client expectations, right? How do you communicate like to a client something's going to change or needs more time or what have you? It's just on a larger scale, right? At this level, when you're in an agency and you have multiple people working on the project and so forth, right?
Yeah.
And there's less room for like, when you're freelancing, you can kind of be like, well, I'll, you know, spend a little extra time here because it's, you know, it's your own thing, your own business, and whatever, and you can make it up some other way. When you're dealing with finite time and finite resources, and wanting to take the most advantage possible of those resources, that's where I think it becomes tricky in terms of like, again, setting expectations for the client around like what can be delivered in the time that we have to the best of our, like at the highest quality that we want to attain. Balancing that with sort of the, you know, clients just want the world and
I think the hard part is controlling the dreamer. If you have a dreamer as a client, that is.
Admittedly, like this has been one of the most positive client relationships I've seen in quite some time. They're very understanding of those things. It's just that, you know, every once in a while, one little thing comes up, and it's heartbreaking when you have to tell a client no. And so, and it's just, you know, you have to, but that's what you have to get over, right? You have to make decisions that are best for the client while still accepting that, again, you're dealing with finite resources.
Which is sometimes what I suggest is that, you know, you give them the options.
Sure, yeah.
You know, I think most of the time we tend to give anyone we work with options and be like, okay, look, you know, you can not do this now, which means we can get on with everything else. You can do it now and it'll be this much more time and it'll push everything back.
Yep.
Or, you know, you add it into another phase of work or to do it, there's this quick hack way, quick elegant way, well-designed way, whatever way, and then let them up to them. Because, but then I think the hard part is balancing the two.
Yeah.
No, what do you guys think? What do you think needs to be done versus not? And then, you know, are you making the decision based on like, well, we just want to deliver the product based on our contractual agreement or what's in the right best interest for the product? And then if you make the call, what's best interest of the product, does the client then go away saying, okay, well, you made that choice, therefore it's on you to make it happen within the cost, because it's always then backed on the cost. So you have this problem, and, you know, we talk about this a lot, right? Are the people we work with, do we care about the people we work with as our customer, or do we care about their customers?
Yeah.
And I think we might have mentioned this before on our podcast, but it's difficult to kind of balance that too.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's a great point. Something that has been talked about quite a bit in the design community is that very idea, right? That your client is not the end user, they're not the customer, in the sense that, yeah, they're paying you, but they're not who you're designing for.
Mm-hmm.
That actually helps in a lot of ways in terms of like being able to justify a design decision in particular, or even an engineering decision, to say to them, to point out essentially where their interests may conflict with their customer's interests, and essentially lay it out that, like, if you want to put your customer's best interests first, then this is what we recommend is the best way forward.
Yeah, it's been interesting because slightly related, in the last week or so, we've been talking about how we work with our clients, right? We work weekly and we sell an iteration per cost or a bundled iteration, depending on the team that works with them. Like, that's the way we're trying to get towards. What if we took on, now this is riffing a little bit, what if an agency was to take on, like, back to the fixed bid style thing, but had the ownership of the proving the value was delivered?
That's an interesting question,
right? Like, you know, like, hey, your budget is 100k or 200k or whatever that budget is, and you just needed to deliver this value to your end customers.
Yep.
We'll do that.
Yep.
And actually, potentially for half the price,
right?
And we'll give you your money back if we do.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of discussion around that very idea. The idea of sort of value-based pricing came to my attention was through Tehan and Lax, really well-renowned, though no longer in existence. Design agency in Toronto. The reason they're no longer in existence, they got bought by Facebook.
Okay, well, that's it. So value-driven pricing, here we go.
Exactly. So they got bought by Facebook, again, mostly because of their just stellar design work that they were doing. But they started talking about that, exactly that idea, where you have a fixed cost, or if you will, a fixed cost that you present to the client, but it's based on the value that you're going to generate for the client. Daniel Mall has a similar... He actually just wrote a book about this for A Book Apart.
So how did they test it, though? How did they test that the value was delivered? How could they prove it in a way that the customer would believe them?
That's a great question.
Because that becomes a challenge, right? Yeah. Like, if we were to do that, like, is value to a customer, well, we're getting signups, we're getting users using our product. Because then it's like, well, is your idea going to work? Is there actually a need for that product in the market? Mm-hmm. And that's out of our control, because it's your business. You've brought us the problem. Like, if you say, if someone came to us saying, look, I'm building this SaaS-based service, for B2Bs, and it's for recruiters, and they need this right now, I'm a leading recruiter, and we built it really well, but then it didn't work, and then they said, oh, well, it didn't work, so you didn't build it right. So that's, you know, I think that's major. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. But did we?
Did we?
Right. It's a really tough question, because on one hand, I want to say it was not our idea, and it wasn't our responsibility to
validate
the market and do all that sort of thing, right?
What if we did?
So something we could do, but it's something that we would have to, like, really, it would take a lot more.
We talked about it with an old product manager we had here. Mark and me used to talk about it a lot, and it was about how could we do give startup consulting, right?
Right.
And because there were a lot of people that used to come to us and still do today, but they'd sit with us for an hour or 2 hours and then walk away going, our idea is not ready,
right?
Or our project, we don't need to build it.
And the question is who then helps them get to that point.
Yes. And is it just a kind of lean canvas exercise / design sprint thing? Anyway, I just it's interesting because it relates to customers, clients.
So
clients as customers.
From my understanding, one of the reasons that we haven't done something like that is partly because of the way that we work with our development team, in that we can ship things pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So the question then becomes, do you spend 6 weeks and less, admittedly less money, like doing customer interviews, doing like some level of validation or in just in general, or do you spend those 6 weeks, build a very basic MVP, and then validate
it? Yeah.
But there's a cost to that,
yeah,
as well,
it is, yeah.
Right? So there's,
because some, but that's a good way of thinking about it though, with the 6 week MVP.
Mm-hmm.
I know of agencies that have done this,
yep,
that are like, hey, we build your MVP for like, and they,
yep,
put a number there.
Yep.
It's like 50K or something.
Yep.
And they, I think that appeals to those who think they can't validate a business without a real product.
Right.
You know, those people that are like, no, that's what,
yep,
we're trying to get to. We're trying,
yep,
to build it.
Yep.
And you're like, well, you don't need to do that for 3 months to find,
right,
out if you have customers,
yep,
or if your consumers want that. There,
yep,
are other methods.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and so then the next point would be that even breaks down further once you introduce product design sprints, right?
Yes.
Then you're not building the whole product, you're building a prototype, and validating that prototype with users.
Yeah.
Potentially real users.
Yeah.
But that doesn't answer the question of, will someone use the product? It gives you a better sense of whether or not they can use the product.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you're taking, you can't, and we've said this before as well, are we the entrepreneur? Are we responsible,
right,
for the success? We've had clients in the past where,
yeah,
they leave decisions on us and we're making business decisions for them, and that's dangerous territory,
mm-hmm,
because it's not our responsibility to,
right,
to make that call for them, but we do because we just want to move ahead and ship it. And it's also some cases we found that, well, we have to make that call because we know that they can't, or they've asked us to, or, you know, anyway, there's a number of ways. Okay, it's interesting. Yeah, I haven't seen any like of those MVP build type offers for a while now, though.
No,
they're, you know, I don't think.
Oh, like the,
yeah,
pay the X,
yeah,
amount and get,
yeah,
an MVP. Yeah, and I mean.
Maybe
partly I imagine because what is an MVP?
Yeah.
It depends on the product, right?
Well, that's
the
other thing.
MVP.
Like an MVP to me now is a lot later stage.
Mm.
I don't think of the first product as an MVP.
Hmm. What do you think of it as?
I call it the problem solution phase. You're just building a prototype to test that it's the solution for a problem you found. So the criteria of success is, did it work?
Mm-hmm.
Not, is there a market that wants it?
But did it solve the problem?
Yeah, did it solve the problem? Which means you're building it for maybe 2 people, 10 people. Did it solve their problem? And is it still solving their problem after doing it once as well? Like, so that's the activation metric and the retention metric. Did you activate them? Did they use it?
Mm-hmm.
And then did you retain them because they wanted it again?
But just because, so where does then the question of whether you can make money off of it,
yeah,
come
in? So that then becomes, you're making it a minimum.
Makes,
no,
yeah,
no, actually.
That's what makes it viable.
Minimum viable product is like, is it viable for the like market? Like you're looking for product market fit,
right,
and you're trying to then figure out like, okay, now I am looking for, I found these people that had the problem. Can I find more of these people?
Mm-hmm.
And is it a big enough market? And, oh, actually, there's 3 or 4 different sub-niches within this market. Maybe I should go after this one. Maybe I should go after this one. Oh, how should I word it? How do I target it? What's the distribution channel? Blah, blah, blah. That's an MVP. But also, like, sometimes there's a minimum selling product as well. And I know no one talks about this. And me and Mark always used to call it the MSP.
Yeah.
I think, you know, this is like, what is the minimum thing that you can sell?
Yeah.
Which is then about pricing your solution, pricing the prototype and seeing, is it sellable?
Yeah.
And that's then you sometimes can put that before product market fit. And once you've figured that out, then you're in growth.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that people, those three stages are three stages. but get convoluted under MVP, mm-hmm. and then people want whatever they're building to satisfy all of those three needs.
Right.
Did it work? Did it solve somebody's problem? Mm-hmm. Can I make money from it? Oh, and there's a market there for it. Where it's like, no, hold on, just break that down. Mm-hmm. Because then to get the problem-solution prototype, you could do a wireframe prototype.
Yeah.
And then you could be like, would that solve your pain? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Awesome. That step is done now.
Yeah.
Next step. You know, did you want to sell it? Well, minimum seller, you ask them at the end of the conversation, would you pay $50 for that?
Mm-hmm.
No? Okay, well, what do you need it to do to pay you that much? Well, you know, whatever. Like, and that's at least qualitative that you know that there's something you can pay
yeah.
people get money from.
Yeah.
And you know this.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people even do that, right? They
right.
jump straight to the, well, this is the product, there is a market.
Yeah.
I just know it in my gut.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna go build it.
Yep.
Anyway, interesting tangent there.
So are we gonna call this episode Fuck the MVP? That's our first F-bomb in the podcast, by the
way. Is it? Yeah. Oh.
I mean, we'll determine whether it'll be bleeped or not later on.
I don't know. Does that mean we have to put explicit on iTunes?
No, I think
now?
We're all right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think maybe we should call it that. F the... you see, look at me being more polite. F the...
you can tell who the CEO is. Felix's always worried about the key language he uses and the way he communicates.
FD MVP. But just to dig into that a bit more, and I think I meet not as many recently because I've been trying to slow down with some mentorship, but those that I used to meet in relation to like, oh, we're getting just started on a product,
mm-hmm.
or I want to build something, they would constantly be like, well, I need this to build it and sell it. And I'm an engineer, and I used to think that way too. And nobody banged on enough to me. No, people told me, look, you can go and validate that now. You can go and figure out. And,
mm-hmm.
But I didn't know how, mm-hmm. right? So my method is, like, I'm telling them how.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like saying, you know those, like going back to the recruiting example, you know some recruiting firms, you know within your network, email them, set up a meeting, go to them. What do you discuss to them?
Mm-hmm.
Explain the solution, pitch it, sell it. If you want to put a deck together, put a wireframe together, whatever.
Yep.
And then put a price tag at it and
yep.
see what they say. And, you know, even with our own products, if we did that, we'd have learned a lot more 2 or 3
yep.
years ago. But it's... loads of people forget that. And I think...
I agree. Except...
consumer products?
Nope.
Okay.
There is a product that we worked on, and they're doing well now. Like they've been able to find.
Oh yeah.
Or they're still working towards product market fit, but they had signed letters of intent.
Yeah, that's fine.
That they based business decisions around
that
fell through.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Now they've found other ones, and they've been able to make up the difference. But there were, I guess the question is, what if you get that qualitative feedback and then
is it real?
And then they go back to them and say, actually,
we've got it, and it's no, and they say no, and they change
yeah.
their minds. You just have to gamble it.
You have to gamble it.
Yeah,
right.
You do.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, my yeah, if you're worried about that, then how many conversations, etc.
Yeah. That could have been it too, right?
Yeah.
They didn't have enough of those, like.
But there is something to be said with like consumer products, other products.
Mm.
You need to. It's very different. We
right.
are. We are. We have been talking very much of SaaS kind of B2B
yeah.
types of services.
Yeah.
And that way, like, you know, being, you know, like products where you only need like 2 clients, 3 customers, and new customers a week for a business.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, you know, getting 1 or 2 qualitative
mm-hmm.
interviews or 10
yep.
is a good enough indicator.
Yep.
Whereas if you're doing something that needs to be the hundreds or the thousands,
yeah.
that the tactic doesn't work.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really interesting. I don't know, like, I mean, we did a landing page for GoodBits,
mm-hmm.
right? And we did a really terrible landing page and said, this is what it's going to do, sign up if you're
mm-hmm.
interested, to see. And we had an internal goal, like, we would get more than 50 signups.
Yeah.
We had 300, and we're like,
yeah.
okay, better do something then.
Yeah.
But then the weakness and the failing there is, like, doing some lead scoring on it.
So, because who are those 300
yes.
people?
Yeah.
And why did they say yes?
Yes.
Because the other question that would raise is like, does that mean that 300 people wanted the product, or is that because 300 people like Calve?
Yes, and what are they building? Yeah exactly. Yeah. And I think that needs to be pruned off.
Because there's a Marco Arment guy we've talked about him before. Yeah. In this paper. He's got an audience of tens of thousands, so there's no way that strategy would work for him, because he would just get tens of thousands of people signing up to that because they love him and have this hunch that they want the product that he's going to make. But he just released a product today that I have no interest in.
Really? I haven't seen
it. It's a free product. It's called Quitter, and it's just to quit apps on your Mac. It's free.
I'll check it out. So I'm going to quickly interject because we're going to wrap this up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Quick 1 minute product of the week. On the spot.
I was going to say one, but I feel like that's going to be yours.
Which is? Go on.
Basecamp 3.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I was going to say that, but you can say it. It's fine. I'll tell you what I like about it and you can
tell me. Well, I want you to hear it say it because you've been using it more, actually.
So we've been internally having difficulty with Slack.
Mm.
And less about the tool Slack, but just chat, I think. Long running conversations have been very difficult, and big posts, because we got so used to posting into Slack as our method of communication, when we don't email, so therefore we don't write a long form post.
Mm-hmm.
We don't detail hey, I want to let everyone know about this client, this is what it's about, this is why we're doing it, this is what's interesting, this is how it fits our goals, blah blah blah, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
Right, instead it's in the chat world, it's, there's this client, we've got it, awesome, come and ask me questions if you have anything about it. And then no one will ever read it because it's scrolled through, right, and it's gone. And then when people then get a time on Friday or on Thursday to read it, this is gone. So with Basecamp, the conversation, the messages is really, just using the product, why it's a product of the week for me,
mm-hmm.
it's just well put together.
Yeah.
It's really simple. I think they've done a great job with Basecamp 3. I mean, we're fans of them. We listened to the Work in Progress podcast that went around for a while.
Yeah.
I don't think that's running anymore, but anyway. I really enjoy it. And check-ins was interesting. We're experimenting with that, which is really cool. There's some team hacks you can do to kind of create synergy. I like it.
Yeah.
That's me.
Cool. I've just really enjoyed, exactly what you said, the longer form content. So for me, I guess then my new product of the week is a friend's app. They just released it last week. It's called Imprint. My friend Matt Alexander started a company called Need Edition some time ago, and that has since rebranded to Imprint. They just released an iOS app that lets you peruse all of their volumes of clothing and accessories. This month's volume is volume 3.5, called Onward. Each volume comes with a letter from the editor, who is Matt himself. And then they also have collections and categories, but what's really interesting about this is it brings their concierge service to the mobile world. So you can chat with a person. Some of the answers are even bot responses. So if you're asking about certain particular things like international shipping rates or the status of your order, those things were handled by a bot, and then everything else is handled with a person. And the numbers that he shared with me were phenomenal in terms of engagement and
that's awesome.
And so forth. So anyway, congrats to Matt on the launch, and check it out, Imprint, imprintedition.com, I think, and we'll add it to the show notes.
Lovely.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Calf.
Thank you, Pat.
Have a good week.
Bye.